Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Audacious Human Podcast. My name is Bobby Hunter, and this podcast is all about going way outside of your comfort zone, way outside, and focusing on the steps involved and how to get from where you are now to where you want to be in life. Because let's face it, nobody wants to settle for mediocrity. This is episode number 5, and today we have a great guest on, all the way from Hamilton, New Zealand. Hamilton, New Zealand. In fact, I think this guy is 15 hours ahead of me, something like that.
That's what we are.
Is it about 15 hours? I don't even know. This is CJO Ian, and this is a guy who I just met tonight. He has overcome serious adversity in his life, and he's going to tell us all about how he went from where he was to where he is now. So welcome, CJO Ian.
Hey, thank you, Bobby. Much appreciate having on the Audacious Podcast. Audacious Human Podcast.
Well, that's it. Right? And if anybody's an audacious human, it's you, my friend. So. I know. You said to me offline just a second ago that you shouldn't even be walking.
Yep. Yeah, that's true. When was that? That was, about 2002. I had a jet ski accident where I'd been an extreme jet skier for 12 years. I've ridden in the largest storms this country's ever had. I've ridden around the top of New Zealand through two oceans and done a lot of interesting things. But I was caught in a freak wave, and normally I had a lot of protective gear and helmets and stuff, and I was kind of out playing around. Normally I'd be riding by with partners, and I wasn't. And a freak wave caught me and smacked me on the ski and hyperextended my left leg back up and almost hit my head. Ooh. And it paralyzed me. And I couldn't use my lower body, and I was caught out there holding on to the ski.
Yeah.
And I had to drag myself back on the ski with no legs and ride it back to shore. Firstly, get it righted. And it was three days before I could actually move very well. And so I went, and I could kind of walk, but not really. But there was 3 days where I was pretty much paralyzed. Hyperinflation around all the lower spine. I messed up a lot of the fascia and the nerves and tendons and cracks and bones in the lower vertebrae. So I went to a lot of different surgeons and Western medicine machines, let's say, had lots of MRIs, and basically was told that I shouldn't really be walking at this stage. And what was the word that's been said to me more often than not was, you need to look for a new vocation. That was the word that a number of people said to me. So.
Yeah.
And being a martial artist for like 45 years and a fitness trainer and an athlete trainer, it was crushing for me. So
I can imagine. But you overcame that, man. Which is amazing.
Well, the thing is, I overcame it. I mean, I've had like 40 years in the natural health and healing field, 45 years in the martial arts, and I'm close to 40 years now in the fitness and athlete training. So I'm not stuck in a box. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, I hear you. Yep, yep.
I have a thing called human alchemy, which is going as wide and as deep on a subject and going down the rabbit holes and bringing it back on like a lead covered table and creating a highest gold standard.
Gotcha.
So that's the word that I use. And you need to, so to look at things that are completely outside the box and aren't even related to what you do, you find magic in those, you know, you really do. You can connect dots, but we tend to be funneled in our Western world, and particularly our university education, where we're just stuck in a track.
Right.
You know, and
have you always thought like that? Is this something you've thought about
when you were a kid? You know, I tell you, I was just thinking out before I did the podcast. When I was 13 years old and the first year at high school, we had an American teacher that came to my little town, you know, 3,000 people. Yeah. And he spent a year there teaching us, and he introduced me to conspiracy theories. I mean, he did, you know, like it was a trip. And so I was like 14 years of age. And like, so I started on that track of looking outside the box, and always had a vivid imagination. And yeah, it started there. It really did start there. And, you know, looking at different things. So looking at things differently. That's what
things say. Differently. So, like you said, most people this conceptualize. You're inside a box. You think differently, way outside the box. So after school, did you naturally gravitate towards a fitness type of a career?
Man, I got thrown out of school at the age of 15. You know, like.
Dare I ask why?
Well, not being able to fit in the box, Bobby.
<That's>, the box was too small for Mr. CJ.
The box is. So I had 22 jobs in the first 7 years after leaving school.
Holy crap.
I was seriously dysfunctional. You know, like my shortest one was 6 hours.
Okay.
So, and
you got 6 hours.
You know, that's a struggle. I mean, finding you have a portal of potential ahead of you that you're trying to find and get in sync with, you know, it's really tough for teenagers and young people looking for that, you know, like, mm-hmm. Like someone said to me once, we're sent to Earth with sealed orders, and our job is to find out what those orders are and not what our career is, but what our vocation is. I think that's an important distinction there, you know?
Yeah, it sounds like it. Definitely. So,
yeah,
you did all these jobs, and then how did you end up doing, like, all this, you know, I know you've done some research, you've got a PhD, like, how did all that come about?
Well, where that really came from was – I have a searching and seeking personality. I really do, you know. I left school, kicked out at 15. I couldn't read or write. Very, very basic, very bad. And then I went back to school. Well, I didn't make it to school. At 27 years of age, I was training because I got into the fitness industry when I was like 18, 19. I was training an ex-rugby All Black, who was, you know, 60 years of age at the time. Yeah. And he found out that I couldn't read or write. And I'd been very good at hiding that from people. So he took me, he was the dean of the Waikato University Education Department. He took me up 2 hours every Wednesday. In 4 hours, he found out all my blocks. And in 3 months, I read my first book ever, wrote my first letter, and wrote an article for the newspaper. The man, Professor Bob Catton, saved my freaking life. And from then on, I had some time to catch up on research and study. I mean, I read books. I mean, the world opened up to me, philosophy, you know, science, everything just opened up. I mean, I was behind in that part. So
it sounds like this guy, this teacher, mentor, really changed everything for you.
Well, saved my life. I was going down. I mean, where would I have been without him? Nowhere of what I've done. You know, I mean, it truly was, you know, a blessing. It truly was a blessing. And what I learned from him, like in 4 hours, he could figure out my blocks. And then I was like, how can you do that? You know, we've got an education system that hasn't fixed it in all the time. How can you do it in 4 hours? You know what I mean?
Same education system over here in the US. So.
Totally. You know, from Ronald Reagan's days, it's been implanted. You know, it really has.
Right.
That started me on a journey. I mean, I grew up on a farm. I went to America in the late 70s.
Okay.
You know, like at 19 years of age, and hitchhiked around America, and America was a completely different place in 1977, man.
I know it was. Yep.
And I mean, from our perspective, this will give, you know, your international people or your American people a perspective. When I left New Zealand in 77, our supermarkets, we had 4 types of toothbrush and 4 types of toothpaste, 4 brands.
Good.
And I get to Portland, Oregon, or wherever it was, Longview, Washington, the first time, and I go into a Fred Meyer's, which is a supermarket chain, and I'm like tripping out. Every night I went to the supermarket, there was a freaking aisle of toothpaste, you know, and like I would go there at night times to just spend time in supermarkets. It was a trip. I mean, it was like
a lot of selection over here.
Oh my God, it was just off the planet, you know what I mean?
You spent time up and down riding around California and whatnot? You spent some time there?
Well, I hitchhiked and rode a skateboard up and down Washington, Oregon, and California. I-5, all sorts of, I mean, on ramps, getting picked up and stuff. I mean, it was a trip.
Did you have a job? What did you do as a job over here? What were you doing?
I worked in the motorcycle industry. Yeah, I had a background in the motorcycle industry for a number of years, as well as the fitness industry and well as martial arts. But, so I was putting bikes together in Longview, Washington at S&W Yamaha. In fact, I was there when the first gas shortage happened, when you guys had that gas shortage back in the 70s.
Yep.
I was driving trucks up and down Seattle with motorcycle crates and bringing them back and forth. And I was I had to drive around Seattle for like 5 hours to get enough gas to get the truck back. I mean,
I was younger, but I remember that gas shortage, yeah.
Yeah, it was wild. And that was, if you look at that was all fake. That was just to jack the prices up, you know. If you look, it's trippy, man.
The lines were all over the place. It was the laser.
I know.
And then you had to go get gas based on the number in your license plate. Odd numbers were certain days of the week, and even numbers were other days of the week.
Yeah, well, we had colorless days here for that reason. You could drive your car on one day, but not the other. We had all that. But I mean, one of my martial arts friends came out to New Zealand in, when was it, like 86, high level. And he said, New Zealand's like Los Angeles in the 50s. This was in 86.
No kidding.
So that gives you an idea of the timeline. I mean, we're all caught up now. We're all caught up. But we've got everything that's not good and good. <You know?
laughs> Back then, it wasn't like New Zealand was behind the times. Well, maybe it kind of was.
No, it totally was. Yeah. Totally it was. Yeah, well, we were really
different types of toothpaste, I guess you could say. Yeah, it's like.
Yeah, well, you know, four brands of toothpaste. I mean, you had a row of it. I mean, it was a trip. It was almost like being on drugs or not. You know what I mean? it was wild.
So you come to the U.S. You're doing motorcycle stuff, and you're starting to train people for competition, like martial arts.
No, not then. I didn't start training people until around about. Well, I got in the fitness industry in 1980. Really, it was in 1980, 81. And that's when I really started training a lot of people there. So, so along with my martial arts, I was in that industry. And so I got to work with some pretty interesting teams. I got to work with like the Tall Blacks, our national basketball team, and our national rugby, specialized rugby people. I worked with the 1984 Olympics for rowing and canoeing. I did strength and conditioning.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, for those guys. So there was like, and I was quite young, but I was in a very progressive fitness center, a very innovative fitness center. So I was quite lucky in that.
How did you, I'm just curious on, you know, because the podcast, like you, this podcast talks about, you know, meeting people who've gone outside the comfort zone. And I mean, you've obviously had, but as a young guy in the U.S. here, how the heck did you position yourself to like get to train the crew team for the Olympics? Like, how did you navigate that?
Well, basically I was in a very upmarket fitness center, let's say. Okay. And if you go back in the early 80s, the strength and conditioning that there is out now is nowhere near what it was back then, you know.
Okay.
like it's night and day now, you know. Like strength and conditioning now is all about recovery. I mean, they've got all the technology. It's more about recovery now for athletes, you know. Like LeBron James and those people are all down on the recovery. That's the key now to spiking through that athletic performance.
Sure.
But so I talked to a lot of people, and I put myself out there. I would go visit people. I would talk to people. I would immerse myself or connect with people. I mean, I have three words that I think people need in their life. They need passion, they need connection, and they need discipline.
Passion, you know, like, connection, and discipline. That's
yeah, great. I mean, we're a relationship economy now, you know. Like, connection is imperative. One man can't do everything. You need to connect with high level people, and we need to bring that information together in a melting pot, you know.
Yeah.
It's one of the things that scientific approach has done. We've gone from a holistic approach to specialization, and we lose the interconnection between those two. It's a real problem now. We need to go back to holistic, you know.
Gotcha.
The scientists need to speak to the healers and the shamans. They need to do that. We need to bring it all in. So I did that. I can tell you from a martial arts perspective, like, I've got to train with the best martial artists in the world. In fact, I've got to teach some of the best martial artists in the world, you know.
Yeah.
And initially, what got me in there, this is an audacious perspective. in 1985, the leading kickboxer or full contact karate fighter in the world was a guy called Benny the Jet Euchides out of Los Angeles, out of Van Nuys, Los Angeles. And he was four weight divisions over 25 years world champion. I mean, surpassing Sugar Ray Leonard and people like that in boxing.
Uh-huh.
And he was like, he would go to Japan and he'd be stormed like a, you know, like a movie star and a rock star. And so I sat there one day. So if you go back, this was 84. We didn't have the internet then, really, you know. We had to dial up. So I dialed, I don't know what you had, 0172 or something, or information a long time ago on the phones, you know. Yeah. I can't remember what it was. But I dialed it up. And he worked out of a place in Van Nuys called the Jet Center, because he was called Benny the Jet because he was so fast. Okay. He goes back to training Elvis Presley, early days, all that sort of stuff, you know, like high level. And I wanted to bring him to New Zealand to do a seminar tour, you know, like here's this young guy, nobody in New Zealand. So I dialed him up. I just rang up the phone and I wanted the phone number for the Jet Center in Van Nuys. And they gave me this phone number and it was the Jet Center at LAX. So I ring this up and I get this lady goes, and I can I speak to Benny Youkidis, right? And she says to me, this is the Jet Center at the airport. And I go, what do you mean? Because I don't know, you know, like I've been to LA and stuff, but I don't know what it is. And talk about divine intervention or whatever, right?
Yeah.
She goes, who are you looking for? I said, I'm looking for Benny Youkidis. He has the Jet Center in Van Nuys. She goes, I know who he is. And she looks up the number for me. So this is an aviation body mechanical place at the airport.
Sure.
She looks up, gives me the number, right?
Yeah.
So I ring him up. So he's an iconic guy in the world. He's got managers. He's high level, you know.
Right.
And I ring up the center and I go, can I talk to Benny the Jet, please? Benny Youkidis. He comes on. I said, you don't know me. I'm here from New Zealand. I'm calling from New Zealand. I'd like to bring you to New Zealand for some seminars. Yeah. He goes all around the world. He goes, well, you know, I have a manager and I have this and I don't know who you are and there's all this money and stuff like that and blah, blah, blah. And I said to him, I tell you what, I'll get on an airplane next week and fly up to see you.
Right.
That's what sold it.
Great.
I negotiated a deal with him outside of his manager.
Wow.
I brought him to New Zealand. His wife and his daughter and his family toured him around New Zealand. Yeah. Cost a fortune in those days.
Right.
And he introduced me to the best martial artists in the world.
No kidding.
That door opened. That's the door that opened me on my martial arts journey throughout the world.
Interesting what you did. You had the guts to be like, you know what? I'm going to forget the manager. You just got on a plane and went to go see him on your own. So that's,
no, you know. I flew up the next week. And the backstory to that is one of the martial art people I was training with at the time, I said, I'm going to get Benny Youkidis or Benny the Jet to New Zealand for seminars. He said, you're full of shit.
Right, right.
That's what he said to me, you know. And I did it anyway. And that the story, that has, I mean, great. I've taught.
Because you had the audacity to do something like that. And that opened up a lot of doors for you.
Absolutely, yeah. And I've sort of, you know, knocked my head against a brick wall sometimes to break through the brick wall. You know, you just have
to. Okay. You know, there's a saying, if you knock hard enough and long enough, somebody's bound to let you in.
Yeah, totally. Totally. Yeah. That's right. I mean, if you're, that's where passion comes from.
Yeah.
You know, if you're passionate, you keep at it. I mean, sometimes you got to cut your losses and run, you know what I mean? And walk away. I mean, you got to know that intuitively, but the passion first, connection, relationships, you've got to form those, and then you've got to have some level of discipline to keep moving on that path. You know?
So the discipline, I think, and this is just talking from, you know, obviously living in this country my entire life, the discipline, sure, a lot of times is seriously lacking in most people. People
absolutely
don't have the discipline to do, you know, like say, just take you, for example, to do those things, or the discipline to stay on a exercise program and lose the weight they want to lose. So I think, sure, I think you hit the nail on the head there with discipline, definitely.
Yeah, well, it's a key component. I mean, I've got 9 separate black belts in separate martial arts systems now with 45 years of training, you know.
Wow.
You know, you got to, I mean, I've pushed myself sometimes beyond the limit to the detriment of, you know, of your, of longevity and health, but, you know, you do some crazy
things. You look good, man. You're still kicking.
I am.
So you do the martial arts stuff, and I know from reading your bio, you also got involved in some engineering, right? For doing some sort of, did you invent something?
Well, so yeah, well, let's talk about fascia now. Like, do you know what fascia is, or myofascia?
Is that in the brain or in the muscle?
It's really cool. Myofascia is muscle and fascia connected.
Connected.
You could go down to the actual fascia as a substance in your body. So, one of the things that I've been heavily focused on is, so you've got strength and conditioning here where you do weights, where you work your nervous system, you work your muscles, you know, you put stress on, repetition, incrementally load the weight to build strength, all those types of things. Everyone pretty much understands that. So that's a pillar of development of human potential or human movement or human right. strength. On the other side is the fascial side, which is very obscure and not mainstream at all. So fascia is a substance around your body that sends communication at light speed, at photon speed through your body.
Okay.
Gotcha. Okay, so you've got the standard neurology coming through, sending messages, and then you've got fascia. What 99% of the biomechanists in the world don't know is that fascia is responsible for speed and direction of movement. When I go like that, it's led by fascia.
Okay.
So the standard thinking is I have a thought in the brain, it wires off, you know, fires through the spine or whatever, contracts the neurology, the muscles contract, and I do a bicep curl, right?
Right.
What they don't know is between the thinking and that first firing the standard neurology is fascial information. Very obscure. All the massage people, all the osteopaths are very, 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 very clever. Osteopaths are.
Okay.
So if you think, you know, you've all seen Tai Chi masters at 90 years of age moving sure. around like this with all their muscle structure withered out, right?
Right.
I mean, it's withered out because they're 90-something.
Yeah.
But yet they're going like, ba-ba-ba-ba-ba, you know what I mean? Doing stuff.
Yeah.
That's fascia. That's fascia training. So I deconstructed that to where we can train the fascia, we can raise the consciousness or the conscious potential of that fascia, and I also developed a way through the martial arts of how to strike it and put it in shock.
No kidding.
From a martial arts perspective. So, and I don't believe that's been done that we know about. It's certainly in the old Tai Chi, but you've got to have 30, 50, 60 years of Tai Chi to develop that. You can learn what I do in between 100 and 300 hours of training.
Wow.
I mean, you can get high-level Tai Chi master abilities in 300 hours of training.
And you've trained this concept that you came up with, training, it's almost like you're training the fascia.
Totally, you're totally training the fascia, and that's what people will think. Like, what's he freaking talking about? But you know, I'll tell you something interesting. We've only seen fascia live since 2007.
No kidding. No.
We knew about neurological contractions in the muscles in 1603 from electronic eels. We only know what fascia does properly in 2007. That gives you an idea of where the study is, you know what I mean? it's the rigging on your, if you're a yachty, it's the rigging that holds the sails in place, you know what I mean?
Yep, exactly.
You know what I mean? And it stabilizes your movement, and it's actually possibly 20 to 50% of your strength.
No kidding.
It really is. It really is.
Focuses most. I mean, listen. I've had a personal trainer in the past. You focus sure. on muscle movement and repetitions and increasing
absolutely
all that stuff. But I've never heard it used. You know, with your training, the fascia.
Well, so let's look at it this way. From a speed perspective, I can take a person of any age, and I trained as an 80-year-old person, and increase their active speed, reactive speed, by 100% in 6 weeks.
No,
I don't care how old you are.
Really?
I don't care how old you are. I've trained him from 12 years old to 80 years of age. Was part of the development of the program to make sure it goes across
right.
every spectrum of the audacious human.
I'm just curious. Training someone of that age, could that increase their longevity? I mean, obviously.
Totally. Well,
yeah.
So longevity and movement are tied together. There's a, I think, South American group. Your ability to get off the floor and get down to the floor can gauge your longevity, your life expectancy. They did a whole study, research. So fascia is the springiness that actually, it's like postural elasticity.
Okay.
So, you know, when you age, you start going, you know, down, 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 down like this, right? That's to do with the frontal lobes for a start, the degeneration of the frontal lobes and the neurons firing in the frontal lobes. And fascial elasticity eroding, right? Those are the two major things that are causing that.
Okay.
So if you are conscious of your fascial posture, it's like sitting up straight. You know the old things your parents taught you? Stand up straight.
Yeah, stand up straight, shoulders back.
Yeah, yeah. Ancient wisdom has so much credibility that we, and we haven't aligned it with scientific, you know what I mean? There's a real problem there.
Yeah.
Real problem. Real problem. So, yeah. So it's a pretty, and I designed a whole new martial arts system, self-defense system on that concept, a completely new one. And if you want to, go audacious, I went, you know, Saatchi & Saatchi, the big marketing companies, right? They have a statement. They say, if you change the model by more than 15, 10%, the market won't accept it, right? So let's say we know how to drive cars, and then, well, we send up a movie. Let's say we bring something, you know, like a space machine that can take you to another planet like that. You're not going to buy it. You're just going, like, it's too far out of the box.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? No, you know what I mean? So I built a system that's 180-degree phase out of every other martial arts self-perception system. I mean, it's...
How was it accepted to the mainstream martial art community?
Well, I've been very, very... Like, I've kept it very, very close because I've been about... It took 14 years.
Wow.
Like, I've probably put, you know, there's 60 to 80,000 hours of research in this going back, you know?
Right.
Nuts. Yeah. It's insane, actually. Felt like a mad scientist at sometimes. It felt crazy. You know,
you're,
it absolutely
did. All the stuff you've done, this stuff you're talking about here, I mean, it sounds like you came up with this, like, we'll use this concept of training of the fascia. It's like, was this something that, like, kept you awake at night? Like, there's got to be a better way. You just all of a sudden dove into it.
I mean, if you look at, see, here's the problem we think on a scientific level. We think that science is an exact science, and we think science comes from experimentation, right?
Yeah.
You know who Carl Jung is?
Famous psychologist.
Carl Jung, the psychologist. I mean, he's possibly the most important psychologist in the 20th century.
Yeah.
I mean, he says that, what did he say? Alchemy, here it is. Alchemy is the, no, dream, alchemy is the substrate. Alchemy is the substrate from which scientific discoveries come from. That's an incredibly powerful statement, right?
Yeah.
The substrate, the underlying thing that dreams come. So you look at Albert Einstein, right? He came up with his scientific principles from a dream. The guy that did the periodic table, see, dreamed of an angel coming to him in the night and giving him the periodic table. Niels Bohr, the person responsible for quantum physics, came up with that in a dream.
Wow.
You know what I mean? That's powerful stuff.
For what Jung had said, what Carl Jung had said, the substrate, the alchemy, in those examples, that's exactly where it came from.
No, that's right. Well, it comes at, so I had visions, I had dreams. I wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning, write things down. I mean, the information of my development came through me, not from me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, you really, I mean, when you align with your potential that's waiting for you out in front, then you're on track. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And that's the difference between, you know, you're on track.
I've done this before, and I've done a few things creatively in the past. And it's almost like you get in a groove.
Yeah.
And it's not.
And it feels right.
It feels right. Exactly.
Magic happens. Magic happens. Synchronicity, those big hands of the universe or God or whatever come and put you in alignment with where you're meant to be. You know what I mean?
It feels like you're home, like you're meant to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. I mean, you're very comfortable in what you're doing now. You're obviously meant to do this. You know what I mean?
I'm new at this, and I've had some listeners. I've had a lot of downloads, but I feel like going back to this, what you're saying is like I'm meant to keep plugging away at this podcast concept because it's comfortable for me.
Yep.
You know?
That's right.
It feels right. So I like that analogy, man.
Carl Jung is scary and phenomenal. I mean, he's a person that didn't read or write till I was 27. And now I read Nietzsche and Carl Jung and all the and Freud and I'm studying ancient mythology and it's just like I had to catch up, Bobby. I had to catch up.
you've done a lot, man. I mean, it's almost like what's next on your horizon or what are you currently doing? Like, do you get these ideas like, you know what, holy shit, I'm going to run with this idea next.
Well, you know, like, I guess the project of building, like, it's called the Tao Shield, my system that I built, you know, and it's out of that 14-year focused research came a multitude of of things that could go out to the world, you know, like pieces to the puzzle. I mean, another situation that helped me, like I had 8 black belts in martial arts systems. I taught all over the world, you know. I had 300 students. I mean, I've spent time with CIA operatives, with special forces, with NASA, with, I mean, I've been in some, you know, I've been in some interesting groups and some interesting things around the world.
Some, right? Might assume you can't share with us, but
yeah, well, you know, like, you know, I'd like to. I don't want the men in black turning up. I don't want Will Smith turning up on my doorstep.
Exactly.
One of the things that happened, I had a situation where my worst nightmare on a street situation stood in front of me back in 2000. And he had almost like bleeding eyes. He was a psychotic, crazy person. His intention was to kill me. I had so much shock and fear go through me. I felt it rush through me and go out through the floor. And I was like, I was a mess. Now, here's 8 black belts, high-level black belts. I mean, I had a 7th dan black belt. I'd done a lot of things. I'd done security work. I'd done bodyguarding. I'd done door work. I'd done a lot of different things, right? It frightened me to the core, Bobby.
Why did it frighten you to the core?
Because there was almost like pure evil in front of me. I mean, he almost had bleeding eyes. He wanted to kill me, and I knew
it's like
it.
Somebody about to mug you on a corner? Or
yeah,
something?
Yeah, just totally. So, I mean, it's the middle of the day, psychotic, off the planet, you know? Like,
right up to you.
Yeah, and it scared me so much. It put me in such a shock.
Right.
That I got my breathing under control, you know, because I knew that. And he switched. He switched and walked.
Right.
I mean, like, it was like in that shock for hours after, I made a decision to never have experienced that again in my life, right? And if you look at it, I've been searching for a better self-protection system, a better raising your confidence, all that stuff all my life. I mean, I had a very dysfunctional youth. So teenage year, you know, very, very dysfunctional. Alcoholism, you know, street fights, all sorts of messy stuff. Right. And so to move forward off that, that's what I was searching for. And it was – so from that situation, I decided that I would – that there was a better way out there. And that's what started me on that. And that's when I started looking and how I did it. So you look at the Ultimate Fighting Challenge, the UFC at the moment, you've got mixed martial arts, you've got wrestlers, you've got kickboxers, you've got BJJ and all that sort of stuff. And they blended it together, right? That's how all martial arts development or self-protection development is done.
Okay.
So to give you an idea of a different approach, and I'll roll on to where I'm going to go with that.
Yeah.
So what I did is I took all my martial arts skills and I put it over in the corner in the box and I started with a blank slate.
Okay.
And so if you're going to build something from scratch and I wrote on this piece of paper, this work is to go beyond the known. This work is to go beyond the known. I still have the scruffy bits of paper that I wrote that on. Now that's a projection statement out to whatever.
Sure.
Where you're going to take it. You know, like you're prepping, it's goal setting. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So then I went, so most people go, well, I take, you know, like self-protection techniques. Do I stand like this? Do I stand like this?
Right.
Do I stand like this? Do I stand like this? Do I stand like this? I mean, what's the best way, you know?
Yeah.
Forget that. You don't even start there. You go back to the emotional and mental environment. Well, that's where you need to start. So what we did is we went to the psychology.
Yeah.
And I had help. But more than that, I went to the development of the human fetus. So at 6 weeks, that human fetus develops these little things that becomes arms and become legs, these nubs that become the extremities. They make their first movement pattern at 6 weeks, and we duplicated that movement pattern and moved forward. So the depth of it, I mean, I had the highest level hand-to-hand combat military trainer that's ever lived on the planet. Is a personal friend of mine. He's 73 years of age. I won't say his name.
Yeah.
He trains all the special forces. He said no one has ever done the level of research that you've done on the situation and gone to the...
Okay.
So, I mean, I didn't say it. He said it.
Wow.
So then I tracked it out. And then you tracked it out with lots of, like, your psychology. So what do we have in a stress situation? And this is day-to-day stress.
Right.
You know, fight and flight is the standard, right?
Fight and flight, yeah, that's what it is, yeah.
That's standard. Well, there's fight, flight, and there's freeze, right? And then there's submission, and then there's posturing. That's the 5.
I've only known the 2.
Of course you have. You've never heard of it. Even fighters haven't heard of submission and posturing.
You
have an animal brain like study from an anthropological perspective of ancestral DNA. You develop reactions of fighting from watching animal movements from a million years ago.
No kidding.
I mean, you have serotonin in your body that's responsible for postural erectness that goes back in crabs 350 million years. Wow. That are operating in you now.
Okay, gotcha.
Right, so we can go out to this, you know, this scientific wizardry, but hey, we've got an animal brain as well as a prefrontal cortex. You know, there's lots going on, man, to deal with.
What was the term? I got a degree in the collective unconscious.
Yeah, well, collective unconscious. Well, that was termed by either by Sigmund Freud or Carl Jung. I think that's a Carl Jung statement.
It is Carl Jung.
Because yeah, it is.
We've all, whether you're human or an animal, there's a collective unconscious, kind of what you were saying before, that it's all sort of, it's still in us.
Totally. Well, you have a limbic brain or a reptilian brain is what they call. Right. I mean, think about when we're formed. We become a lizard before we become a human. I mean, look through the, you know what I mean? Like, stop for a minute and go, whoa, just in amazement of that.
That's a great point. That's a great point. Wow.
And so we've got all these influences and we think we're so smart and intelligent. I mean, one of the problems with the political correctness movement that is sweeping our country, our world at the moment is you're trying to cram millions of years of evolution in the 11th hour sliver and change it. Really tough. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's what you're doing. Yeah. the liberals, whatever. I mean, I'm not.
Yeah, I don't. You know, that's a whole separate topic, man.
Totally. That's a whole new world, you know.
But about that forever. I agree with that.
I know. So I started on the psychology. So what's the best way to stand? The way you stand and hold your posture affects the relationship of the attacker intricately. You're mirroring in confrontations. If I made a grimy face, if I go rrr, you want to go rrr. Right. If I grab you aggressively, you want to spark up and fight if you have that in you.
Yeah.
If I touch your fascia, it flatlines your emotion. Wow. Like there's an emotional relationship. We're talking off the planet study here of possibilities, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I'll give you an analogy. I do a specialized security for the largest concert, rock concerts, 5 stages, 22,000 people in New Zealand.
Right.
They have police come in if someone nuts off completely, and I run a preemptive security team.
Okay.
Since I've been doing that, you got a guy that wants to fire off. If you grab him and hold his fascia correctly, they stop and they don't want to fight. And then you say to them, I'm going to take you out. What do you want to do? Or do you want the police? We had the situation. Huge monster. And the guy said, I want the freaking police, right? So two of my guys are holding him on his fascia. He's flatlined. His emotions is, there's no spy versus spy out of Mad Magazine. You know what I mean? You know how that works.
Yeah. Right?
And so the police come in, they have a big fight. Three big 6'5" guys, bits are missing off. It lasts 7 minutes. They have to drag him out. My guys touch him, he stops. I mean, it's nuts. It's nuts. You build a tuning fork. Think of that. You know a tuning fork. Boom, it's a vibration. You build a tuning fork that neutralizes the energetic resonance coming back in the attacker. I mean, that's where I went as well. So it's...
You know, it's interesting you've sort of developed all this and trained people, and you train the security teams. You said you worked at the CIA, the FBI, you know, NASA and all that.
Yeah. I work with CIA operatives, not the CIA. Contractors, not employees. Yeah. I'll make that distinction.
I'll definitely make that distinction. So, but my question is, Ian, are your methods? They're not mainstream.
No, they're definitely not mainstream. But they interface with mainstream. You know, like because mainstream, main. So let's look at. 90% of research is agenda-driven. You know, it's funded for a specific goal, right? So you've got agenda-driven research. You dump all the research on the table. You have to align that research to go where the agenda or the financial is.
Correct.
And all this other stuff is dropped out and then not valid, well, not valued, let's say.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know exactly. Yeah,
from, you know what I mean? So I'll give you an idea here. Do you know what an energy, you know, energy inside your body? Do you know what an auric field is or an energy field is? Have you ever heard of that?
I've heard of an energy field. An auric field? I've never heard of
An auric field is a human bio field, let's say, an energy field. So to give you an idea, your vacuum cleaner has a cord that comes in. There's electricity coming that, and you can take a machine and measure the field around that electricity.
Right.
You can do that with the human body, right?
Oh.
Now, you don't know this, but MIT has measured that at 13 feet.
13 feet emanating out from the human body.
Outside of the human body.
Wow.
Now, I don't care whether people believe that or not. And they're not telling you that. They're not telling you that, man.
Is it different than your aura?
Yeah, it's totally aura. It's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
It's exactly what it is. So your emotional state affects your energy field. I mean, there's an interesting story about the Dalai Lama. When the Chinese envoys came in to discuss Tibet and China, he sat down and read their aura and said that they were lying and left the negotiation and fled from the country.
Wow.
You know, so,
wow.
And some people have that skill set, you know, but sure. Intuition is a version of that. I mean, you can't debunk that. My kids go to school and they're teaching the five senses, right?
Yeah.
You know, the five senses. I said to him, did they talk about the sixth sense? He goes, no. Even if you just alluded to the sixth sense, you would give the opportunity for potential of thinking.
I see.
But if you don't give it, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I
they can't. They can't quantify it, and your teacher's probably not skilled enough to quantify that. But you know, every single human being has sat in a car at an intersection, someone looked over, turned their head, and someone's staring at them.
Right.
You didn't get a cell phone call. What was that about? You know what I mean?
The
you
point,
can't debunk it.
That,
you
that,
can't debunk it.
You can't debunk that at all. It happened to me the other day, actually.
Totally.
Happy. Yeah.
Totally. And if you want to do it, if you want to focus your intention like a laser beam and put it behind the lower part of the ear, your hit rate will go up 100%.
Your heart rate will go up.
No, your mental focus. If you focus like a laser beam, take your consciousness and focus into a person's just below the back of their ear, they'll pick it up quicker than if you don't do that.
No kidding.
You can start playing games, man. You can start practicing. I mean, there's a lot that went into it. So from building that program, lots of things came out. So to learn something quickly, you have to change the teaching environment. People talk about flow state in athletics, like you're in the zone, you're in the flow state. So I've been training like Nitro Circus extreme athletes for a few years now, and I did that for two reasons. Like I train Levi Sheward, who's the Red Bull motorcycle flipping world champion.
Okay.
I just went on tour with Nitro Circus through New Zealand for the five shows and trained their athletes. And I was, years ago, there was a thing called Crusty Demons of Dirt, which is where that Nitro Circus started.
Okay.
I went on tour with them through New Zealand. I took them through a tear. I rode with them. I crashed down a volcano, tore my shoulder to bits, broke my spine, got helicoptered out, all sorts of stuff.
Shit. Wait, hold on a second here. You're riding a motorbike down the inside of a dormant volcano?
Inside of a volcano. Absolutely. Sorry. That's a true story. And well, I couldn't get out. I mean, it's scorier. I skidded. I'll tell you the story. The guy I had a helmet cam on. I skidded. It's all caught on film.
Right.
I hit a rock. It goes to blue screen. It flicks back out. I'm flicking over. It comes back on. And they got the everything was shredded. Because you imagine scorier. I look like I'd been sandblasted. And my bike looked like a sandblasted. Cracked T11 vertebrae. Three tendons ripped off my shoulder. Unconscious, you know, all sorts of stuff. But anyway, they got the film out, and it was the old days with the little micro sort of cassettes.
Yeah.
Goes, yes, we can put it on the movie. So that's my claim to fame. It's like, but discovering the fascia was part of my rehab from all of my injuries. Like I said, I shouldn't be walking. I shouldn't be doing what I'm doing. I mean, I'm doing flips into the foam pit now on scooters and bikes with Nitro Circus practice. I mean, like, I'm 62 years of age, man, and I've been broken forever.
That's awesome. You know, your methods, have you ever heard of Dr. Joe Dispenza?
I totally know Joe Dispenza. Love him to bits. Unreal. He's outstanding.
His story is he got hit by a truck on a bike race, and he basically healed his spine with his mind.
Like, totally.
And it's amazing. So he's huge now. I've read his books and whatnot, but it's almost sort of like what you're able to do to some extent.
Well, here's what I try to do. The Western model is a lot about the mind, you know, like Tony Robbins, rah, 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 rah. You know, we went through all that, right?
Right.
What we have to do is connect the body, the mind, and the body together. Like people say, well, the mind leads the body. You know what? The body leads the mind. Like there's a dovetailing, like joinery. There really is. And we really have to embrace that.
Yes.
And the fascia is the catalyst to that.
No kidding.
The fascia. And you can't really say it's a substance. I tell you what, the fascia is a semi-liquid, semi-solid neuroconductor. No, what is it? Light speed. Sends light information at light speed through the body.
Gotcha.
And so it is a conduit for outer consciousness and inner consciousness. Hmm. So just think that for a minute.
Okay.
So you imagine your body, let's say there was a doorway or a conduit, you know, things coming in and it transports from outside to inside. That wording comes from MIT.
Does it really?
Yeah, and you've never heard it and you won't hear it. Okay, so that's why. So we need to look down fascia. I believe in the future, once we get that strength and conditioning pillar and the fascial pillar, when we build that up, we'll build super athletes. We'll actually build superhuman beings way outside of technology. We'll do it from, you could say God-given or whatever potential that we came into this world, however you want to position that.
I'm curious about, because you're so very knowledgeable about about training athletes and whatnot. What are your, I'm curious, how does nutrition fit into all of this? Because if you're training, you're probably advising them as well as to
totally. Well, see, nutrition. I would call there's art, and there's science, right? There's painting by numbers. Put it this: there's painting by numbers, and there's artists.
Right.
Painting by numbers is I color this number 3 and color this blue and whatever, right? Artist is the Leonardo da Vinci. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or a Botticelli or whatever, right?
Yeah.
So, nutrition needs to be looked at. You can do the paint by numbers across the board. We're low on minerals, we're low on water, and our hydration is shocking.
Yeah.
Like I know a lot about water. I've got a machine that has high osmotic drive, which forces water into the cell.
Okay.
I mean the high, like if you're 10% down on hydration, you're 10% down on athletic performance.
Oh sure.
You are. That's been proven.
You can get mentally fatigued.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But people need to get their nutrition set for who they are. So there's blanket nutrition, and then there's individual, which I would call artistic nutrition. And you need to be quite onto it to figure that out. You know what I mean? So
what works for me might not work for you or might not work for him. That's right.
Although, we need more minerals. We need more enzymes. That's another one. We need more protein. We need better quality protein.
Yeah.
I mean, you can take protein. You can get protein. You get like 18% assimilation out of protein, right?
Right.
And then you've got like MAP amino acids there, which is a new scientific hack.
Okay.
That's 97% assimilation of protein in the body. No toxins.
No toxins. Wow.
Because you get, when you eat food, you get a toxic.
Oh, yeah.
That's why the highest longevity people live from not eating too much. That's why, cycled eating, what do they call it?
Intermittent fasting.
Intermittent fasting picks up everything,
It works. Started doing that, and I started doing some research on it. It's been around since the 1940s and 50s.
But it's probably been down, it's probably been around for about a million years.
Yeah, sure.
One of the things I should tell for people, anyone that's doing fasting, they're going to have hunger cravings.
Yeah.
If you take coconut oil, like you either do shaved coconut, real coconut, or coconut oil, you put it in your mouth for 30 seconds and swish it, it'll flatline your cravings.
Okay.
That's a hack. Yeah, you should do that. So, because when people go through, because hunger pains are associated with emotional as well, emotional traumas, or, you know, we have emotional eating and things like that. So it's not just a nutrient thing. You've got an emotional, like, you build emotional or neurological patterns of things. You know, your anger is a neurological pattern. Sokolov did that research, one of the Russians in the 60s, you know.
Heard of him, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, you know, that you build these patterns in there, and a lot of eating and stuff. So, yeah, coconut oil or coconut chew on them. That's a major hack for dieting. For
anyone dieting. That hack. Hold on a second.
Yep. Yep.
So I got to write that down just in case.
No, cool.
just in case I want to hack my cravings.
Going back to flow states.
Yeah.
Athletes need to get in flow states. So flow states have a so what I did to see, we're time poor. So the standard martial arts, you know, in the old days when I used to train, it was 5-6 days a week. I never trained 7. Now then it went to 4 days a week, then it went to 3 days a week. You're lucky if you can get people, apart from your kids. Even the kids' programs sometimes now in martial arts are 1 day a week. Yeah. You know, we gotta take them swimming, we got them this, we got them that. Yeah, we're time poor everywhere.
We're overstimulated.
Yeah, totally. So to change the learning environment, you have to, like, what I did is I threw out the standard martial arts teaching. I completely changed the culture. I completely changed the movement patterns, the system. I completely changed the teaching structure. Because if I was going to take someone in 80 hours and train them to a high level once a week for an hour and 15 minutes,
yeah,
you have to change everything. You have to change. And we've got enough science and research to look down that track. You know what I mean?
Of course. Yeah.
So flow states is one of the things that I develop. So a flow state, let's say you're a big wave surfer, you're waiting at Jaws and Oahu there, you're hanging out, you're eating food, you're smoking a bit of dope, playing the guitar, waiting for the big sets to come in the winter, right? And they're building up, and so you're getting apprehensive. So your flow state's starting to build, you know, tomorrow might be the big set tomorrow, might be the next one, Jaws or whatever they are. And then they go out there and there's pressure, you've got, you know, cortisol, epinephrine, all these different chemical cocktails happening in your body. It's building up, you go out on the big wave, and you either pop through that and you have a gold medal performance, or you don't.
Right.
So there's this pressure building journey, right? Sure. So what I did is I developed a system where you can get right to the face of taking off that wave and flatline everything.
Interesting. Wow.
It's called five flow. I termed it five flow, and I haven't released a lot of these things because I've spent 14 years as a mad scientist doing everything I can to speed up this one environment, and then there's all this stuff falling off the branches.
You're always on to something, it sounds like.
Well, I'm always pushing the boundaries as much as I can, you know.
It's people like you who, you know, make discoveries or, you know, change the minds of other people, find new ways to do things, more efficiency, whatever it is. Yep. I mean, there's something in you. You mentioned before that you had a very dysfunctional childhood.
Yeah.
So I wonder if, and now it's like you're completely opposite, obviously, of everything that happened to you in the past.
Sure.
And I wonder if you had a, let's say, a functional childhood, I wonder if you would still be this way.
That's actually really, because I've thought about that deeply, specifically with studying the psychology and, you know, especially German psychology, like going back, 1700s and stuff like that, 1800s, really interesting. I had a free rein in a sense. I grew up on a farm. I didn't have an education. We didn't have television until I was 12.
Wow.
Okay. You know, so no stimulus from that. You know, like, I used to teach my kids. I've got younger kids. I've got 11 and I started really late. I've got an 11-year-old and a 9-year-old, you know. Okay. I used to say to them, I showed them the old pictures as a kid. I go, the world was black and white then, son, you know. You know, the pictures. And they never believed it for a while. I was just kidding them, you know. Yeah, but so no TV. Left to my own devices in a natural environment and went to a lot of, like, I grew up on James Bond movies and John Wayne movies, Western, you know, hero driven, mythological, you know, like archetypal heroes, let's say, you know. And so I had exposure to that, and then I would come home and I would build something out of James Bond with my hand. So, and I didn't have the stuck in the gray table with the gray shorts and the all facing, you know, with the one teacher.
Exactly.
You know, like one of the things with martial arts, if you know martial arts, We have one person at the front who's an instructor and all these rows of people teaching, right? And basically it's pre-military training. It was actually watered down for the Japanese. The kamikaze pilots came out of that watering down of the martial arts, putting in the school systems and the university systems to pre-train discipline and jump how high, sir. And so they lost the depth.
Yeah.
So you see a lot of martial arts done by itself. We all have interaction with two people. You actually have to have the relationships and the feedback from the two pieces. So I built a what's called primary trainer observer. So you have one person doing the move, one person giving them feedback at every repetition. So here's Malcolm Gladwell's 10,000 hours to mastery.
Yep, yep.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
That's bullshit. You can shave that in half. You could go to even.
Well, because you know what? He's got. Malcolm Gladwell writes some pretty good books, Blink. And
no, he did. I'm not bagging him. I'm just bagging
that concept of the 10,000 hours. When you hear that, you say to yourself, holy shit, I got to put 10,000 hours to be an expert. I get what you're saying. You want to shave that down. Well, look what you did the 80-year-old guy who you trained.
That's right. See, so here's the thing. I mean, 10,000 hours to intro elite athlete, 30,000 hours to elite status, right? That can get you doing this.
Oh, it does. It's like, I was 3 years old.
That's right. And instantly that movement pattern, when I move there, I invoke cortisol response in my body.
Yeah.
And depressive hormones. When I do that, I reverse those hormones in my body.
Right. I got you.
Just your postural movement is biochemically altering your state. That's something to worth thinking about, man.
No, not at all.
That's really something to think that the teenage world should think about for a start, you know?
You gotta write a book, man. I don't know. It sounds like you've got like multiple books in you.
I need multiple lives to write multiple books.
Yeah. You know,
so changing all of that around, right? So, like, I've got Nitro Circus guys that are doing, like, on Nitro Circus tour, those bikes and scooter guys.
Wait a second, Ian. Can you just put your mic up a little higher?
Oh, sure. Sure. There we go. Those Nitro Circus guys.
Yeah, I got you.
Are doing world first every second event. Like Jed Milton, who's one of my clients, who's the only person to do 4 backflips and land it at Travis Plastano's compound in America. The only one. No one's beaten it, right? It's like a 10-10 in a gymnastics event. You watch the Olympics and you go 10-10 and you go, wow. You watch Jed do 4 of these and land it, you go, that's nothing. This is really well.
What's his name?
Yeah. Jed Milden. Milden. Yeah. He's a Kiwi. In fact, if you YouTube Revolution Day, and watch that clip. You watch the New Zealand training and you watch the American training. It's phenomenal.
Yeah, I'll check it out.
I mean, those guys get fear coming up to their events. They're breaking world first every second event. Every second Nitro Circus, they're doing a new thing. No one else. No. So I went into that at camp for 2 reasons. I've studied the mindset, the consciousness, awareness, and psych preparation of the CIA and all the specialized military operatives, right? I've done the same thing down the martial art track as deep and as ancient as you go. And then I went into Nitro Circus. Well, those guys are at the cutting edge of breaking records. They're doing things no one else is doing. And then brought all that information and research to develop five flow, a mindset that puts you in the zone like that once you learn it.
Do you ever think about, because you've done this training, do you have like a team of trainers that you could roll this out to? And are you more of a solo guy? Like you sort of operate.
Well, I've been a mad scientist looking under every rock. Yeah. You know what I mean? You know, like what's there? What can we use that? No. It's just like.
That's your style, though. That's what works for you.
Well, that's my journey in evolution. I mean, what I've really wanted to do is create some of these programs and put them out in small bite sizes that someone could learn or utilize. I mean, I'll tell you something interesting. You would have had a situation where you go to open a beer can, a beer bottle or a jar, you know, like your wife said it. Hun, can you open this jar? Because they can't open it, right?
Right.
Yeah, you've heard that. It's like, if you raised your consciousness of your fascia, and I taught you how to do that, and you used five flow and added those together, the jar goes like that.
No kidding.
Pops off like nothing. And it works on 80-year-old people. I mean, it's a trip. It's a trip. And I mean, this stuff has come through me as the journey, and then I've tested it. So I got a one guy who's got an arthritic joint all the way, or joints through his vertebrae, and he can't use his strength in his hands. He's a policeman. He's going to lose his job now because of that, right? Yeah. So he can't open the bottle caps. This is the story from him. Can't open the bottle caps anymore, right? So I teach him this. I get him to do it. He goes pop. And it goes pop with a softness. So the martial arts, they talk, everything's hard, right? Yeah. You've got yin and yang. You've got hard and soft. The most deadly and secret teachings are the soft, not the hard. Nope. And I train them both together.
Did Bruce Lee practice that sort of thing?
Well, I've been fortunate enough to train with, well, more people that have trained with Bruce Lee than anyone else I'm aware. But I trained with his very first people that he trained with in Seattle, Washington. So an 18-year-old kid comes from Hong Kong to Seattle, Washington, and surrounds himself with a group of very tough individuals. Some of them are street fighters. Some of them hitmen for a gang. There's seven hills in Seattle, and there's seven gangs, and each one of them has a hitman for the gang. Mm-hmm. So he evolved his system in over 4 years, 1959 through to 62. The story you know about Bruce Lee is pre-62. San Francisco, start teaching in Seattle, San Francisco, LA, movies, blah, 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 right? I've been blessed to evolve Bruce Lee's developmental work. I will say that.
Yeah.
I will say that. And fascia is the key of his work. It absolutely is. He never say it, but it is. Okay. It really is. So, I owe a lot to Bruce Lee. I mean, I never met Bruce Lee. He died in 73. I started martial arts in 74.
Okay.
So, but I mean, I have a picture on my wall. I have had it for like 30 years.
So, but you're fortunate enough to have known, you've trained with people who knew him and whatnot. So that's.
Well, see, that's the other thing. That's interesting.
If it rolled into you, who knows?
Well, you know, like, there's an osmosis kind of, you know what I mean? I mean, if you hang around, absolutely, you hang around billionaires, you become wealthier. You know what I mean? It's no different.
Rubs off on it. You know?
Sure.
Well,
sure.
Listen, man, I mean, we could, there's a lot of things.
We could go on for hours.
You mentioned to me, I want to finish up with one thing here. Was something in the beginning you said to me before we started recording was mind, movement, and mastery.
Yep.
Three M's. What do those words mean?
Okay, so so if you look at all of your life, right? I mean, let's put it this way. People think they're okay where they are. If you're not evolving at some level, you're going down. There is no midpoint.
Yeah.
There is no sitting there. Like you're either de-evolving or evolving.
Correct.
You know, like, and that's your mastery path. I mean, it's like that. It's like this or something better.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You know what I mean? This or something. I'm not happy with this. Well, then something better. You know what I mean? And to do that, you have to do work. Like, we have an indigenous culture called the Maori people. They call it mahi. It's work. You've got to do work. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and the other thing is you've got to look outside that. So you've got mind. We've got mind influences. And the mind, the brain, that's outside. Energy fields, auric fields, that's all in the mind, right? Movement is the body. How are we, if we don't move through our body, why were we given a body?
Good point.
You know what I mean? Like, why weren't we this spirit or the soul or whatever you want to, or this brain that popped in, that floats around, you know, consciousness. So if you look at the ancient martial arts teachings or yoga teachings, they used to sit in these meditative states. Yoga and martial arts and Tai Chi. In fact, Tai Chi was developed to move the body because the body was deteriorating from too much meditation. That's the genesis of Tai Chi and yoga. You know, it's not some thing, you know what I mean? Like when you actually delve into the history and understand what really happened, you learn things that, you know what I mean? You connect dots, you know, you connect dots.
You've managed to overcome a lot of adversities, you know, in your life. You've connected a lot of dots, and I have no doubt you're still going to keep connecting dots for a long time. I mean,
I'm focused on living to 120. Whether I get there, it doesn't matter. You know,
right.
George Burns said he was going to live George Byrne signed a contract to play Las Vegas at 100 years of age, right? He did his last show and died, I think, 6 months after that. I figured, I'm going to extend that out 20 years.
I think it was 101 when George Burns died.
Yeah, something like that. It was a little bit after, but he played. He said, I never break a contract. I think that's what his word was, you know. I never break a contract.
I got to tell you, man, I've thoroughly enjoyed talking to you.
Same, man. It's been really cool.
You're a fascinating man. You really are. And, you know, I think I feel blessed to, you know you now. And, you know, and you're a pretty good role model for a lot of people. I mean, you said before, you have this almost an insatiable curiosity.
Yeah, I do.
You do something about it. A lot of people have curiosity, but they do nothing about it.
Well, you that's know? Fear, though, eh? That's fear of ridicule. That's the problem.
Exactly. That's all it is.
You know, so what? You know,
all that from your mind. Yeah. You know, I mean, from when you said before in the beginning of the podcast, you simply got on a plane and went and met this guy in California and convinced him to New Zealand. I mean, that takes balls to do something like that.
I mean, I went to South Central Los Angeles where all the riots were once because I wanted to see South Central Los Angeles. Yeah. I wanted to feel that experience, you know, and like people said, you're mad. And I was like, you know what I mean? You got to step up, man. You got to step up. I mean, don't do crazy things. I'm not saying that, but I think take micro bites to build. What we tend to do in this age is we get so bombarded and suppressed and the pressure of everything. We've got to bust out, like find one medium of your life that you can bust out on. You know what I mean? Just pick one.
That's just great advice. That really is. I actually might use that in the show description. I like that. Find one medium of your life that you can bust out.
But just one, because everything else is too intense. Just pick one.
You've managed to pick a lot of different mediums, man.
man, I've had a lot of help, Bobby. I've had a lot of help. I've been blessed from, you know.
Well, I got to wrap it up now, but this has been fascinating, though. So just stick around 1 second. I'm gonna. But everyone, can we find you online, C. Joe Ian? Is there?
I'm not even. I'm like under the radar. But you can get me at QSRsports@gmail.com. You can put my email address on there. I'm more than happy if people want to.
I'll add that in the show description. So, if anyone wants to reach out to C. Joe Ian, it's QSRsports@gmail.com. Correct.
Yeah, QSR Sports, Quantum Scientific Research, but QSR Sports with an S at gmail.com. So.
Gmail.com, and you're out of...
Yeah, I'm totally open. You send me an email, I'll talk to you.
Okay, great. And you're out of Hamilton, New Zealand, right?
Yeah, totally. Hey, thank you for the opportunity, and thank all your listeners, and great success. And
I will.
Great focus and success for the future for you, man. It's not about luck, it's focus and success. and being audacious.
That's it. If there's one word that I took from this that I've learned from you in this last hour, it's the word discipline.
Yep.
I think that most of us tremendously lack discipline.
You know what? You know that slither that you're going to go out and push the boundaries. You could have that slither and discipline. Like one of the problems is 100% perfect. Perfect can be paralysis, man.
Absolutely.
You know, it really can, you know. So bust out in that area and put some discipline there. Forget about the rest of your life. Just take one little step, man.
Email this guy. He's good. This guy knows his stuff, man. He's excellent. So, CJ Ian, thank you so much for being on the Audacious Human Podcast. And again, folks, thank you for listening to the show today. My name is Bobby Hunter, and this has been episode 5 of the Audacious Human Podcast. Thank you so much. Good night.
Thank you, man.